Organize Me Radio, episode 83, Designing a Learning Space for Autistic Children. I'm Naima Ford Goldson. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Organize Me Radio. I'm Naima Ford Goldson, and we are closing out Autism Acceptance Month with talking about how the design of an educational space can foster learning. Today's guest is the Executive Director of Peachtree Autism Services. Please welcome Whitney Boley. Welcome, Whitney.
Thank you, Naima. Thank you for having me. I feel so honored to be here.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited that you're here. Disclaimer, Whitney works at the ABA therapy site that my son Gavin used to attend, and he's learned so much from being there. And I'm so excited to chat with you, Wendy. So I would love to know, what made you decide to go into special education as a career? Tell us about your journey.
Yeah. So it actually started, I was a psychology major in college. I went to College of Charleston, South Carolina, and I was in one of my psychology courses. And we had a parent come visit that was a parent of a child with autism. And she sort of gave an impassioned speech to us and about the need for providers to work with children with autism, individuals with autism. And this is really before insurance and ABA. This is back in 2004, before it is what it is now, which is, you can find a lot of ABA providers, behavior analysts, which is, what I am now. So that was, sort of made me feel like, oh my gosh, I wanted to help. And I really felt a calling, and I really felt a connection to this mom who seemed to be really desperate for help. So they passed around a form to go volunteer at the South Carolina State of Disability, like the Disabilities Board in South Carolina, and you went and did a training. You can be a paraprofessional, and then they match you with a family. So I was, and I was matched with a family who was really wonderful, had a three-year-old little boy who I worked with, but I really didn't know what I was doing. The training didn't prepare me to actually do any kind of ABA. It was really just to safety and care. But the family was really kind of ahead of the curve. And they hired privately a board certified behavior analyst, which was, there were only, I think, a few in the state at the time. And he came in and he trained me in how to do ABA. So how to really look at behavior specifically, how to look at the skills of a child, how to look at their language and how to shape those language opportunities, how to take data, which is how we use data to guide our decision making about how effective our treatment is. So I just really got into it, and the little boy I was working with started talking and making words, and the parents were noticing a huge difference. And I mean, that was it. It was like I found, I just fell in love with it. So that's what, I went on to school, and that was a game changer for me.
I love that, because I feel like being the parents of a special needs child with autism specifically, and that communication is important, because it's important that we know, what they want, what they need, how they're feeling, and things of that nature. And you saying that, that child started talking, I know that, gives people hope that ABA therapy can help them. But for those people who don't know what ABA therapy is, can you tell us what ABA therapy is and why it's important for autistic children?
Yeah, I mean, really, ABA very simply is the science of learning. So as a therapy for children with autism, we really look, again, as a science to treat barriers that are the hallmarks of autism spectrum disorder. So that's going to be the kind of the trilogy is the markers are social deficits in social communication and behavior. And so our what's, really important and different about ABA compared to other therapies, it's incredibly systematic, because we're also using data to systematically guide how our treatment is working and how a learner is responding to that. And so Really, we can track any kind of behavior that we want and put an intervention in place or procedures in place, treatment in place to increase that behavior or decrease that behavior using the principles of behavior analysis. So that's really important. And I would say that what's really important is that that data piece is really what is helpful, because the data is our guide. So if what we're doing is not effective, it's going to reveal very quickly, quantitatively, what we're doing is, the child is making progress or not making progress, or maybe we're kind of stagnant. And that is a problem, right? Because time is everything. And so we want to be efficient with our therapy and efficient with skill building.
So you're the executive director of Peachtree Autism Services. Can you tell us a little bit more about it and who benefits from their services?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're located in Dunwoody, and we serve children from ages 2 to 12. We are a really good match for children that are needing a minimum of 20 hours per week. So we have a morning session, an afternoon session, or we have a full day option, which is 8:30 to 4:30. And we also have on our team, in addition to our ABA team, we do have a consultant model, where we have a speech pathologist as well as an occupational therapist. And those professionals consult with us because they're experts in their disciplines, and they kind of guide us on some decision-making for treatment that'd be relevant to those specific areas and disciplines. So we moved into a larger space from Sandy Springs about a year ago, and the space is much larger, which is cool. So it gave us a lot of practice with figuring out design-wise, space-wise, organizationally, what do we want? And we had a blank canvas in the office space we moved into. And so we worked with contractors to really design what we wanted. And so our model, which is kind of unique, is we have classrooms that are grouped by age as well as language level. So we have three classrooms, and within those classrooms, we also have some pullout rooms. And then out throughout the clinic, we have other separate pullout rooms. So it really is designed with everything in mind to support learning opportunities and different kinds of instruction. So there's the tabletop work, where people may think about this when think about ABA is more like, structured teaching opportunities with a teacher or a therapist across the child at a table, or they may be doing some more floor time where they're doing what we call natural environment teaching, where they're working on more naturalistic play and language opportunities, or they may be doing group time in the classroom where it's more structured group instruction with other learners. So we really wanted to be thoughtful of all those different instructional kind of modalities to when we were designing our space. That's a little bit different about us.
How can designing educational spaces benefit children with autism with learning and skill development?
Great question. So I think that it's important to remember that autism is a spectrum, right? And every child is not going to be learning the same way. So just like we have different procedures or different teaching techniques that we might use with some learners, those are not going to be the same that we use with others. So you want to think about your space the same way. How is that learner going to learn best? And really individualizing your space accommodate how the child is going to learn and how to enhance those learning opportunities as much as possible.
Okay, so then what are some essential considerations when creating that educational environment for children with autism to foster their skill acquisition?
Yeah, so I think that it comes down to you kind of want to ask yourself some questions. So first of all, what is it that you're teaching, and what is the goal for the space and teaching that skill, right? So most of the time we want to be thinking about independence. How is that learner going to be progressing, and how are we going to get them to the end, which is they're going to be independent with something, right? So we want to make sure in the beginning too that we are considering where our materials are placed. Are they things that they can easily reach, or are they going to have an adult always be there to give that to them? And that all the things maybe need to be consistently in a certain area so that they can go to those same places and not be confused about where they're mixed up. So again, that organization piece, consistency with where things are placed. Maybe go look at my spice cabinet at home and you'll realize why it takes me an hour to make anything. And then I think that you want to consider if you're working on something like what we would call a chain task or a multi-step routine, like making a meal or something like that, like consider the flow of that and where you will be, the learner or the child might be having, where you're having to teach that and where they're moving around in the space. That's another location consideration, is the location of where things are in the space. And then another question I would say is, how are you teaching? So there's the what, like what's the purpose? What's your end goal there? And then how are you teaching? So again, like I said before, every learner is going to have different needs and learn differently. Just like you and I, like we all learn differently and have, you know, some people are visual learners, some people are auditory, you know, children with autism, they have, that's the same thing for them, right? Is that one, they don't have like one way they learn, right? So we want to really understand how they learn best. And then we can consider that for our space. And so, for example, some children may really learn best by having that hand over hand prompting, or they have to do some physical guidance. You know, is, if that's what your learner needs, then you should be thinking about, is your space big enough for that? Are you going to be able to maneuver and walk around with them or do that in a space that can accommodate that kind of teaching technique? You know, one example we have here in our clinic is when we're designing our space, we asked the contractors for these extra wide hallways because we wanted to make sure, we knew that we were going to be working with kids that still needed to learn that skill of walking next to a person while they walk. It's not natural to walk behind somebody or in front, and then you still want to be able to pass others. So we kind of, those were kind of like little things where we had the luxury of kind of saying we want these extra wide hallways, but it's really been nice to be able to do that because we're thoughtful of the adult needs. There needs to be space for an adult there on the other side. And so the last question is really kind of combining like what you're teaching, how you're teaching, and then if making sure your environment fully supports all of those things. And I would also just add safety to that, because there are some things that you might be doing that, you know, may be unsafe for a learner, and you want to be considerate of that. So like if you're in the kitchen, or in the bathroom where there may be medications, like just be thinking about some of the things you may need to put in place to make sure that environment is safe. Because if the expectation is they're doing the skill at some point independently, you want to make sure that you are have things in place to keep them safe, and you know, put locks, childproof locks, or barriers up so that you know, they won't, there's no risk or injury. So that's another important, safety is always an important thing to think about.
So can you provide examples of design features that support effective learning and skill development for children with autism? You mentioned the wide hallways. I think that's great. What are some other design features?
Yeah, so I mean, some things that we kind of always think about is, as a general rule, we want a clean and organized environment. So what does that really mean? So I mean, I think, again, everybody learns better when things are neat and organized. That, again, is no different. It becomes more important for children with autism because, you know, of their learning style, and they may need more repeated practice. So consistency with where things are stored and located is important. So having those organizational systems in place becomes important. Being able to understand, you know, what goes where, and if you have a busy or cluttered environment, that becomes harder for them. We don't want things to be hard for them when they're learning something new. We want it to be easy, right? So making sure you kind of are setting up your environment so that things are organized, clean, and then kind of laid out, and that is, you know, a path for success there. The other thing to think about is, what are those salient cues that a child might need to be successful with certain skills? So one of the things that we use quite a bit is our visual cues. So those are picture icons. So for example, one thing might be to have a, when we're thinking about play, setting up play areas, is to have The Legos, for example, if they like to play with Legos, those are going to be stored in one area. There's a basket with a picture of the Legos, so they know that that's where all the Legos go. It's also near a table that is in close proximity to that storage area where Legos can be easily played with. And so when we are teaching these play routines, we have them sample, like, what do we want to play with? We can kind of help guide them to make a choice, to advocate what they would like to play with. We then pull out that bin of that play activity. They play with it. We kind of sometimes have to start teaching even how they play with certain materials appropriately, and, you know, then how to return those items to that place so that, you know, again, we're building those skills. So I think that, you know, those visuals are really helpful to kind of set up for success because it becomes a routine. And that can really be nice for the home too, for parents that are busy that maybe have other responsibilities, but it's like, hey, when we play with Legos or we play with this, we kind of always have, this is our routine. And this is how we end our play routine, as we put them back here. And so that we don't have to constantly be going in and cleaning up every time, and just kind of set that up as, you know, for success in that way.
I love that. I think that is great information because Gavin, you know, has to have his routine. He has to know where everything is. Something funny that he did the other day was, and he never makes his bed, but before we left the house, he wanted to put his blanket back and he made his bed.
That's so great.
You know, the best way he could. But he, you know, he has his things in the place, and it's like, if we move it from a place, then he goes and he puts it back to, you know, where it is. We don't have many, I guess, visual labels. We have a lot of, you know, labels that are like printed out or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah.
But hearing that, you know, how you do the labeling and everything like that, you know, I might go ahead and change some things and maybe I can.
I mean, in your home, it's different, right? Because you have, like, you know, two children, right? And so that's a little bit easier, but this is a clinic. We have, you know, 16 children. We have, you know, 20 staff coming in and out. And when you start multiplying that, it's like, well, who took the Legos? You have the Legos, or where, you know, we have four different Lego bins, but they, you know, different classrooms. So it becomes more critical for that once you start talking about more and more children to have systems like that in place.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. Yeah. So I'm not behind on the curve.
No, you're doing great. You're doing
Thank
great.
Thank you. Yeah. So why is it important for educational spaces to accommodate sensory needs for children with autism to enhance their learning experience? I know with Gavin, I feel like there's so many sensory needs that he's had. And of course, I learned a lot from Peachtree Autism, you know, and what I could get and what I can put into our space. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, thanks. And I actually, like I said, went back and listened to your episode on that. And I was so excited to hear that so many of the things that you purchased were from hearing about some of the things he enjoyed in our clinic. And then, of course, we do have our OT consultant who did give us guidance on what are some really, you know, equipment. We have the platform swing, the crash pad, the egg chair, and those were all things to kind of help, you know, children that all have different needs. So, I mean, in general, I think it's important because, you know, we want the environment in which they're learning to be reinforcing. And when I say that, they should want to be there. We don't want, they're learning new things. Things are already hard. Let's not make it harder, right? So how do we have the environment be more reinforcing or rewarding for the child? We can have that space, curate that space for them. So if we know that they like to bounce, or we know that they don't like these bright lights, or we know, you know, that they may have an aversion to certain sensory things, then if we can, let's try and control those things as much as possible, because it's our space, right? Or we make a space that could be available for them to access, maybe by request, that can really be dedicated to that, so that they can kind of have access to that, which is, you know, having them, you know, feel comfortable. And that's really what we're trying to make sure that we're doing when we're teaching, is we don't want this to be harder than it already is. We want them to be comfortable. We want to hear what makes them happy. We want to make sure that they have access to that. And we want to make sure that if we can accommodate the environment to suit them, then that's what we want to do.
So there is a huge difference with what you'll find in the classroom in at a school versus in like the classroom of a private therapy practice.
Sure.
And I, in my opinion, there is more to offer with the private therapy practice versus school. What practical advice would you offer to educators or school administrators when designing classrooms for children with autism to promote skill acquisition?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, I recognize that healthcare is a different industry than education. And education, public education is, I would say limited by funding, and that varies by state. And so, look, teachers have hard jobs, and they're not paid enough. I mean, so I am like all about the teachers and advocating for them. And I think what I would say to school administrators is, listen to your teachers. They are going to be, those are the people that are on the floor with the kids that know what they need. They are watching what their students need. And so they should really be listened to, and they say, hey, we need these materials or whatever. And I know money is always a problem. So as much as we can, give them freedom in their own classrooms to make changes that will align with the instructional practices that they would recommend for a learner. I think that we should really, they should really be considerate of that. When we are meeting with, when I say we, my clinical director and I meet with BCBAs on our team, an agenda item that we always review is classroom operations, classroom materials, and that's always a touch point. Like, hey, how's it going with the materials? How's it going with where the furniture is? Just last week, we were told that, like, we had the nap mats, and the nap mats are overflowing into this other instructional space. Well, that's taking away space from other things that we need. And so what do? So we had to, get another cabinet that we're ordering and having installed. But it's just like, it's a constant conversation about how are operationally are things moving in the classroom. And we want to make sure that we're protecting quality instruction and learning opportunities. And that's always at the forefront of our decision making. And so, hey, if a cabinet is going to make a big difference and going to make things easier and give us more opportunity to get other materials on the floor and therapists easier access than like walking down the hallway to another storage thing, let's do it.
Okay, great advice, good information. I love it. Okay, so how can the layout and design of an educational or educational spaces in general facilitate social interaction and communication skills development for children with autism? I know with Gavin, social skills is important. He is very, affectionate with people, but he might not necessarily play back and forth with people at all times. So,
Yeah.
is there a way for this to foster that social interaction?
Yeah. You have such good questions, by the way. I love this one. I think it's really hard because there's a lot of reasons why children with autism or even not, right? They have a hard time with peers. And we want to, again, in the space that we have, we want to make sure that we're inviting social interaction and that things are aligning to bring children together and to create naturally opportunities for social interaction. So how do you do that in your space? So part of, we were very intentional when we designed our clinic here because we have both classrooms and we have those separate pullout spaces. The separate pullout spaces are really important for individual work or for learners that aren't quite ready to be in a busier mixed environment for specific instruction. But the classrooms are critical because that's where you get these nice opportunities where even if they're just doing parallel play, you can have those learners still playing in each other's space a little bit, even though we're not kind of make, they may, the demand or the requirement may not be you must play with this other child. They may not be ready for that. And that's okay. Many children, especially during COVID, they came to us and they have been with at home with mom and dad and playing in their living room or their room, and that is it. And so then they're not going to come to us, and then we have this expectation where they're just like going to start diving in to play with another child. Like that can be really hard. So we want to meet them where they are, and we want to kind of take steps to kind of get them more comfortable with playing with peers. And so one of the ways, strategies that we do that is, you know, first of all, having a space to do that that's inviting, having those play materials out. And the other thing I'd recommend is getting doubles of everything. So even if they're playing with an adult, you know, sometimes that back and forth, like for example, like Marble Run, if like you've got a marble and it's going down the track, like we've got several Marble Runs. It's a popular toy here, but you know, it's easy if there's not a fight over, they're not ready to share and take turns, right? Those are things that are skills that are hard, right? So we don't want to make a peer interaction punishing out the gate, right? So we can have two Marble Runs set up where they're both playing with them and they can start just getting comfortable in each other's space. So kind of taking those baby steps. So I recommend kind of having duplicates of a lot of your materials when possible so that you can avoid conflict or sharing or waiting and taking turns. Those are all skills that you have to kind of build on. And then the other thing, I think you mentioned like communication and how do you build communication opportunities. Another really important thing I think is with your space is thinking about for children with autism that are still learning to communicate their wants and needs, creating an environment that may allow them to both one, have easy access to things where they can kind of reach over and grab it so you know what they're interested in, but then two, also having a little bit more challenge where it may be within their view, but maybe on a shelf, slightly out of reach, so they have to actually create that opportunity for them to ask an adult for that item. So I think just having, being thoughtful of creating, you know, things that are motivating, things that they are wanting to play with, a reinforcing environment to bait, you know, the environment to bait that skill of communication, and then to have that facilitated there with an adult that's ready to kind of help them with that communication opportunity. To have it up on the shelf and like, oh, sure, yeah, ball, absolutely. Let's have the ball, you know, and they hear the word. So that's kind of the other thing I was just going to say is about where the placement is of some of those toys as well.
So why is flexibility and adaptability crucial in designing educational spaces for children with autism to cater to their evolving learning needs?
It's a great question. You know, again, I think it goes back to the child and what are their individual needs? Where are they starting out? And what I really love most about my job and work with children with autism and training others is to figure out how they learn best. What are those specific teaching strategies or prompt level that a child is going to need to learn most effectively in the beginning? And then that can change over time because your goal is for them to become independent with the skill, right? So you always have to be kind of monitoring that along the way. And when we're looking at program design, we're always looking at what is the end goal? How do we get there? It's like a roadmap. Where are we now? How do we get there? And you're always thinking about, I need to be removing myself from the equation because my expectation is for this child to have to gain this skill, and they need to be able to do this fluently without my presence, without my voice, right? So those are the things we want to think about, and we have to think about how we're fading out, right? And so that's really important to kind of be thinking about that and being flexible along the learning path to make sure that you're considering your prompt and how you're fading out. And again, you know, using data is really important because that's going to be our guide for how we do that. And so we might be moving a little bit too quickly with moving out with our prompt levels, or we may be moving maybe too slowly. So again, our data is really great to kind of guide us on that. And I think just in general, what I really hope that, you know, listeners can hear is that, you know, we want to make sure that we are moving with a child within their learning journey. And there's a quote that is from a very famous behavior analyst, and we have it in our lobby at Peachtree. And it's from Dr. Ivar Lovaas, who stated that if they can't learn the way we teach the way they learn. And I really feel like that's important. And that's sort of our mantra here at Peachtree, because if what we're doing isn't effective or it's not helpful for a child, then it's on us to change how we're doing. And we need to be flexible and we need to adapt how we are teaching so the child can be successful. So I think that's just really important that, like, as teachers, as instructors, as therapists, like, we move with them and we are the ones that need to adapt.
I really hope people are really listening and let that sink in, especially if they are educators or work with children, or if if you're working with adults or something along those lines. People learn differently, and that's kind of what I do for organizing as well. Like when I go into people's spaces, it's meeting them where they are. It's, working with them. Like it's not cookie cutter. It's not one size fits all. What works for one client won't work for the other client. So
Exactly.
if you want to like maintain the organization, it's, learning what works best for you. So I love that you said that. I really hope people are listening because I just think that that would be a game changer to so many if they put that into practice. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So I would love to know, my favorite thing to ask everyone that comes on the podcast is, what are some of your favorite organizing products or productivity tools? And do you have any specifically for educational settings that you love?
Yeah, great. So we do love some IKEA. We like their the Trofast systems, so both the wall and the floor mounts. We also have, there's a brand, I think it's in I've seen it in like Montessori school classrooms where it's like wood. It's the ECR for Kids brand furniture. They really make nice durable shelving. We like those for our classrooms too because they come on the rolling casters, so you can kind of move those. And if you need to create space, natural space between instructional areas, you can kind of just tilt those and create that natural barrier versus like those partitions, which I've seen in some places where I'm like, okay, they're not very pretty looking. It divides up the space and they don't really serve a purpose other than blocking view. And so the other thing is labeling. So we have used a variety of like vendors or sellers on Etsy that have pretty ones. We can kind of change those out. So I recommend checking out Etsy if you also like the style thing. And also we use a number of baskets for all the storage. Also, I think most of our baskets are actually like the cloth ones, the woven ones from, I think they're from Target. So we really like those, and they have like leather handles, which is nice. So they're pretty durable. So you want to try to be thoughtful of durable things. Like we don't really do a lot of plastic because we feel like it just breaks and falls apart, and I don't really like how it looks. We do like to have an eye for design, and I know you probably appreciate that being an organizer and a designer. That's part of it, right? And so we do like to be thoughtful of that because, an organized space is wonderful, but one that's also has some aesthetic to it, and it just really creates this environment where you want to be there. And so we have, of course, a team of therapists, parents that come in, and we really want to be to showcase what we're doing. We want kids to like our toys and for them to be clean and organized. And so when you come into the space, we want it to just you have all the good feels and that things look nice, organized. And so I think that that is helpful. The last thing I will say about this, though, is one thing that I see happen quite often in schools and other facilities is broken toys or toys without batteries. And it happens in my house too. And setting up some systems for that, and that, like, where does this toy go to if it's no longer working? Can it be fixed? If not, do we just let's just get rid of it? Or, also if it's run out of batteries, what's your system for that? Instead of just sitting it on the shelf and having it collect dust and, oh, nobody plays with that anymore. Well, what's wrong with it? Well, it just needs batteries. Okay, well, like, just what's your system for that? With, again, so many people, sometimes, it does take time to go in and get a screwdriver that fits, find the batteries. Like, those are all steps. So just create a system for that, in whatever organization you're working for, to avoid all that extra clutter of toys that are just not played with because they just need new batteries. And then there's the island of misfit toys, where, if it is a missing toy, it goes into the specific place. So then there's a system in place for someone to go back and restore it to its environment. Because inevitably, despite however organized you are, I'm sure you've encountered this where something gets, moved away from wherever it belongs, and then it's a part of something, and you're like, what does this actually go to? And you don't know. So it goes to the island, and then someone can then hopefully reunite it with its friends. So that's the other thing I'd say.
I love that Island of Misfit toys. I think I'm gonna need to take that
Yeah.
on too. Because we have so many things around our house. Like, what does this go to? Oh, well, it's going in the trash, you
Yeah,
know?
I
So.
know. It happens. It happens in my house too, believe me. So it's the struggle's real.
Okay. So I love all those items, and all that advice that you just gave. Love it. I have some looking up to do, look at IKEA and search
Yeah.
different things. Final question. I would love to know, what is your greatest professional achievement?
It's seeing Peachtree grow, honestly. I mean, I started Peachtree back in 2015, and it was just me. And it's been amazing. We now are a team of over 20, and we've going into our ninth year. So it's just that, to me, being able to serve so many families in the Atlanta area, over the years, has just been amazing to watch, and our team is really great. So that's really it, seeing the growth.
Whitney, thank you so much for joining us and educating us on how to create an educational space for kids with autism. I really appreciate your time. Can you tell us how everyone can find out a little bit more information about Peachtree Autism Services?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. We have a website, peachtreeautism.com. And we also have, and that tells us a little bit about our practice, our team, a lot of photos on there. We have a gallery, check it out. And then we're also on, the social for Facebook as well as Instagram.
Whitney, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you all for joining us. Be sure to tune in next time for an all-new episode.